Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. Let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, we have Chief Chris Noller all the way from Pueblo, Colorado. We also have retired LAPD Commander Lieutenant Chuck Springer as well. And he's over in Florida, so he may be LA, but now he's in Florida. And we've also got Rich Steropoli. He's retired Secret Service, and Rich has been a great addition to the show as well. Guys, a shout out to our sponsors. You know, our title sponsor is Gauls at Gauls.com. We had the CEO Mike Fadden on the show yesterday. Rich was on that show, and man, what a great show and some great discussions about go bags and strategy involving that and some other things. We also have another sponsor, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. Thanks to them. I believe that we're on week number 8 now on being on satellite radio. Gunlearner.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.live, and Safeguard Recruiting are streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're streaming to about 1.5 million followers right now. Also, Tubelz, they built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. Please check them out. And a shout out to Brian Burns with the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thank you for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make the show happen. And now, here's what we're going to be talking about today, guys. You know, our first story, Alligator Alcatraz, illegal alien detention facility. And this is proposed by none other than the Florida Attorney General. So what an interesting story. And it's in my neck of the woods and also in Chuck. So Chuck's a little closer to Alligator Alcatraz than I am, but I'm curious what his thoughts are. We've also got a suicidal man fatally shot when advancing towards Oklahoma City police officer with a knife. We have a Baltimore cop. They release a body camera footage of a fatal shooting where the suspect shot an officer in the foot. Then we got a sergeant shoots a robbery suspect when the officer is pinned inside the open doorway of the car as the subject takes off this robbery suspect. Concord police officer shoots an armed bank robbery suspect who had a handgun that had been converted to fully automatic and had a drum magazine. You don't see those a lot. San Diego officers fatally shoot a guy who's armed with a brass knuckled knife after a chase and a crash. And then, guys, those are the stories, assuming that we have time to get to all those. So let's go and start off with Alligator Alcatraz. It's from RVMnews.com, which is Red Voice Media. Alligator Alcatraz, illegal alien detention facility proposed by the Florida Attorney General. So Florida AG James Uthmeyer, he proposed a controversial new idea this week addressing the ongoing illegal immigration status. And you know what? It's all about the illegal aliens, right? We're not really talking about putting the other population in there, but we're talking about the illegals. And they're talking about constructing a detention facility deep in the Everglades of Florida, surrounded by natural barriers such as alligators and pythons. Yeah. So think about that for a minute. And I know a lot of people that don't live here, they've never seen or touched an alligator, gotten them close. And so so I know there's more of a, like, I'm kind of a mystic, or, you know, a lot of people are scared of these things, but these are serious threats. Uthmeyer said that the Everglades location represents a efficient and low cost opportunity to build a temporary detention facility because you don't need to invest in much of the perimeter. And he explained that if people get out, there's not much waiting for them except for alligators and pythons. And he goes, there's nowhere to go, nowhere to hide. He added in the video, they suggested that the project could actually be operational within 30 to 60 days of groundbreaking, that's mind-boggling, right? He said the facility would be able to house up to 1,000 individuals at a time. And he stated that the initiative would require cooperation from both the Miami-Dade and the Collier counties. They border the Everglades. He said this presents a great opportunity for the state of Florida to work with Miami-Dade and Collier counties. And he said Alligator Alcatraz were ready to go. He also noted that the proposed site, it's adjacent to an airstrip, so it would be easy to transport detainees directly to the facility. This kind of took, I think, all of us off guard. It certainly took me off guard. And I know it's in my home state. Roughly 8 hours away from where, well, actually 4 hours from where I'm at. Rich, what are your thoughts on this?
I love this story. I think it's the planned borders on the genius. I don't see what the liberal woke Dems are complaining about. Most of the inmates that are in there, they managed to make it across in the heat across the Rio Grande. So we're just putting them back in their climate anyway. But, you know, too bad. So you want to go over the wall and get eaten by alligators and pythons? Hey, that's your problem. You know, that's number one. Number two, I've been to a bunch of prisons all over, all over the country, to include, you know, Lompoc out in California, Sing Sing in Attica in New York, Alderson in West Virginia. And a lot of these prisons are built in the middle of nowhere. Yet you take a look at something like New York, you've got two of the biggest prisons, the MDC, the Metropolitan Detention Center, and the MCC, the Metropolitan Correctional Center. And they're located within, you know, 500 feet of the Brooklyn Bridge and the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. You know, why give any opportunity to a prisoner to even think about escaping? I think this is a great project, totally in favor of this thing. And I hope we continue to do this thing. Maybe we can get some desert property somewhere out in the Vegas desert and build another prison out there. This is great.
I like the way you think. You know, Chuck, if we could just get like 24-hour drone footage from above, or maybe surveillance cams, just in case anyone does sneak out and gives it a try, I'd love to get some video footage of how that goes.
Oh yeah, and with today's technology, that wouldn't be a problem. I'm not opposed to this at all. You know, as long as it's necessary and it's cost effective. 1,000 people doesn't seem like a whole lot, because I think we have quite a few more people that need to be addressed on the immigration side. But and the name's catchy too. When you mentioned, you know, putting a prison out in the desert, you know, there was that sheriff in Maricopa County a number of years ago that housed a lot of detainees out in tents.
Joe Arpaio. Like,
yeah, made them wear, you know, pink underwear and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's not a bad idea. And if the facility's there, you know, the runways are there, you're gonna have to build some type of housing, I'm assuming. But yeah, if it's needed and cost effective, do it.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious, you know, if you worked at the prison, where would you be commuting from? You know, I mean, if you're in the middle of the Everglades, you know, that is one thing, you know. I kind of wonder how they're gonna work that out. But maybe you just take the old you know, the what do you call it? The boats, the airboat. Thank you. I was thinking the airship, but it's not the airship. But yeah, the airboat. Maybe just take the old air or live on a freaking, you know, a houseboat or something. But that would be
there's Alligator Alley right long. Next to it, right? So there's got to be something going on over there.
Well, yeah, to be honest with you, I did not know that there was an airstrip down there, and I'm still kind of wondering how that, you know, how that works, you know, with the but it sounds convenient, so yeah, I'm in favor as well. I'd like to get some more information on that. So we'll keep following that story, but I've been wanting to cover that. So that is the latest and the greatest for South Florida. Moving along, guys, we got some stories with video components. If you're listening to the show audibly, maybe your favorite podcast or your favorite radio station, stay loyal to those outlets that are bringing you this good quality content. In return for that, we will describe in great detail what's going on in any video component so that you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But if we cover a story that you absolutely have to see, all you have to do is go to our Rumble channel, because the very next day at 9:00 in the morning Eastern time, our producer will produce a special version of the live show. He takes the live show and he'll create a video version of that has every video embedded into it as we're talking about it, and put pictures of the good guys and the bad guys that pop up as well. So it's really a great way to watch the show. It's too difficult during a live show to play live video. There's just so many things that can go wrong with a live show. I assure you, please take my word for it. Adding extra components like that, you're just asking for trouble. But this is really a great way to watch the show. So that said, on this particular story, from This Is Butter, our favorite law enforcement video channel, suicidal man is fatally shot when advancing towards an Oklahoma City police officer, and the guy's got a knife.
What's going on? Hey. Put it down now. Put it down now. Put it down now, or I'll shoot you. Put it down.
So, Oklahoma City Police Department, they've released this body cam footage from an officer-involved shooting that occurred on Monday, June the 16th. And according to the agency, a call came in the morning from a man who was threatening suicide. And officers identified this individual on the scene, and he was armed with a knife. So his name is Eddie Hill. And it says that he attempted to stab an officer, continued the attack after being ordered to drop the knife. And it said that he was shot and transported to a nearby hospital where he passed away from his injuries. But that story does not do this story justice. So let me hop to my notes here. And yeah, it's a suicidal man call. And at the 27-second mark, the officer is going up to the door and he greets the suicidal suspect who's on the other side of the door. And the officer goes to open up the door. And man, that's about it. As soon as that happens, this guy busts out of that doorway. He's got the knife. And man, he is all over this officer. How this officer does not get cut, I have no idea. And so now the officer's going in reverse. So he's backing up. They create some distance. And then the guy comes to the officer again, but the officer backs all the way. Remember, he was at the front door. I mean, he literally grabbed onto the door. It was opening as the guy decided to bust out of it. Officer backs up all the way through the front yard, in the street, across the street. By the time the officer shoots this bad guy that's advancing on him for the second time with the knife, he is on the other side of the street when he neutralizes the threat. And so, yeah, it's hard to predict when these things are going to happen, but it's really a realistic video. They even have a slow motion version, which kind of helps you see what you might have missed in real time. But it was done very, very well. Chief Noller.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty dramatic the way the guy busted through that door to get to him. One thing, it's always easy when you're watching a video to second guess and to you know, be I guess somewhat critical of what the officers did. But it looked to me like he was carrying his flashlight in his dominant hand and wasn't even able to draw his weapon as the person came through the door. I hope that if that's the case, you know, I mean, I guess maybe he was left-handed, I suppose, but it looked like he shot right-handed. Hopefully the officer has looked at this video and is rethinking some of his tactics that way. I don't know how you deal with the person that's got the mindset to come through that door like that. I don't think there was a whole lot they could have done prior to that happening. They're trying to de-escalate by giving him commands, telling him to drop the knife and that, and he just runs at the cop and they did what they had to do. And it's unfortunate that it also looked like one of the officers towards the end of that video was shooting back towards the other officer that was the initial officer at the door. So it looked like there may have been some crossfire stuff going on there as well. But I thought this is falls into that category of, you know, you just got to do what you got to do to protect yourself.
Yeah, good pickup, Chief, on the, on the gun hand, the light. We will be, I know Rich is ready to talk about this, guys, but stick with us for our first commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, you know, it's time to talk about Gauls at Gauls.com. As police officers, we all know that we can buy our gear from a lot of different places, especially when you consider going online, right? But I want to remind you guys about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. I don't know of a company that fits that bill better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you go looking for your gear, please support our title sponsor at Gauls at Gauls.com. Now, for the loyal listeners of the show, Gauls is going to do you one better. They're going to give you a radio code. It's Radio 15. That'll get you 15% off your next purchase at Gauls.com. That is good through June the 30th. Again, Radio 15. Type that in at Gauls.com in order to get 15% off. And they have gift cards. We give away two every week on this show. We're giving a giveaway one today. Go to Gauls.com. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card. They'll be your new best friends. Gauls.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Chris Noller from Pueblo, Colorado. We got retired LAPD Commander Chuck Springer, and we've also got Rich Steropoli, retired Secret Service. So thanks, guys. We've been talking about a use of force incident where it was a suicidal call. Cop goes up to the front door, sees the bad guy on the other side. And I'm saying bad guy because he did not comply with law enforcement commands, but the guy barrels out of the door, attacks the cop with a knife. And they go all the way across the street before the cop ends up, you know, shooting him and putting him down. And I know we just heard from Chief Noller and Rich. I know that you were ready to talk next, so the floor is yours.
And I'll tell you what, if you haven't seen this video, for those of you listening to this radio show, you need to take a look at this thing. And I don't care what department or agency, what academy you may have trained at, this had training exercise written all over it, right? The only difference is in a training exercise, that guy comes barreling through that door like the Kool-Aid man, right? In a red man outfit with a rubber knife. Yet this was real. This was 100% genuine situation here. I thought the cops did, you know, a great job, backing up, telling him to drop that knife. And eventually they have to engage the guy and shoot him. But, this is why we go through training. And this is why we've got to keep all our training and all our tactics in our mind when we pull up to somebody's house. You just never know what you're going to be met with. And it's not always the situation where you're going to be able to ring that bell, knock on the door, and everything's nice and nice, right? And this is the classic situation. Fully recommend watching this video.
Good commentary, gentlemen. Good commentary. Anybody else on this one? Are you guys ready to roll to the next one? Oh, Chuck, go ahead.
Yeah, I won't go over what Rich and Chris have already talked about. And Chris is right. It's just a video. We're not privileged to the other investigative material, most importantly, what the officer's statements are. But my observations are more pre-incident than post-incident. The shooting itself, I think, is good. They do a good job. You have at least three officers that are pulling up pretty much at the same time. So my question would be, did you meet somewhere else and had a plan? Because I see the first guy get out and he makes a beeline for that front door. And he's got at least one partner officer that's almost running to catch up to him. So was there any kind of discussion before you got there how you were going to deal with this call? And, you know, was any less lethal considered? That's just kind of what I noted from the video. It looked like that first officer just got out of his car and beelined up there. It would be nice to have a partner officer with you when you're approaching the door.
Yeah, good. I think you're totally right, Chuck. I'll pick up on that if you don't mind, Chip. But, you know, the best advice I ever got was when I first started from an old hairbag agent. He said to me, hey, kid, when you show up at somebody's house, you know, slow yourself down, take a second, think about what you're going to do before you just walk haphazardly up to that door. So I totally agree with you, Chuck, right? There should have been, some discussion about how are we going to handle this when we show up at this guy's house.
Well, great commentary, gentlemen. Thank you guys so much. If you're ready to go over to Baltimore, we have another Baltimore story that's going to be pretty interesting to cover. At rumble.com, again, we're still at This Is Butter's channel. Baltimore police release a body cam of a fatal shooting where the suspect shot an officer in the foot. There's a lot of video footage here, but some is better than others. So I kind of tried to point you guys in the right direction, at least from my perspective. There was some video where it was just too far away to see what was going on. But then we got some up close and personal surveillance and also one body cam that was pretty good. So Baltimore PD. They released body cam footage from a fatal officer-involved shooting. It happened in West Baltimore on June the 17th. So it's 7:15 in the evening. Officers observe a man, and the guy's got a handgun. You see the cop kind of bail out of the car on the passenger side, and I couldn't really tell. They didn't show the car. I couldn't tell whether it was a cool car or whether it was a marked unit. But this guy's walking away from the cop. The guy's got one of these it's like a side bag, you know, it's not really a backpack. It's got like a side satchel bag and he's carrying that as well. And he's walking away from the officer, but then eventually when the officer's getting close to him, he starts breaking into a stride. And so the officer is able to grab onto the guy. And right when he does that, the guy points a gun and he ends up firing at that officer and ends up hitting him in the foot. And so the officer, you know, goes down. And then you've got other officers that respond to the scene, and this bad guy turns around and he starts confronting those additional officers that show up. So they actually, three officers return fire. It says that he shoots at them. They hit him. He goes down, but then in the surveillance video, you see this guy, he's on the ground and he grabs the gun again. And at that point, I couldn't find a surveillance video showing a secondary shooting on that. The 36-year-old bad guy is Bilal Yusuf Muhammad. And Abdullah Jr. is his name, from Baltimore, and he ended up being, you know, pronounced dead. And, you know, just looking at my show notes and stuff, it seemed clear to me that the gun that he got his hands on was in this bag. And when the cop, you know, was going to grab on to him, his back was to the cop. So the cop really couldn't see what he was doing with his hands. But he broke into a run at the 16-second mark, at the 20-second mark. That's when the officer's hands go on the suspect and he goes hands on. And the surveillance video starts about the 1:07 mark. So that's kind of where it goes. But there is a picture of the firearm that the guy had, but it was also kind of like a crowded courtyard in a pedestrian mall kind of an area to kind of like set the stage. We got about 1.5 minutes before we do our next commercial break, guys. Any commentary on this one? There was a lot going on definitely in this one. So Chuck Springer.
Yeah, as far as the shooting goes, I mean, it's pretty clear that this guy's a lethal threat. So I have no problem with the OIS itself. I'd like to know what they were stopping them for in the first place. That might, you know, give some opinion as to how I would have approached them. The only other really thing I saw that I might nitpick a little bit, and this would be for, you know, a debrief scenario, is there's the guys that are shooting and backing up, they're passing up good cover. There's trees there that they can take cover behind, and they end up in open areas without cover. But, you know, again, a little hindsight, a 2020 hindsight there. But again, just for a training debrief. And then, of course, you get the crowd that comes in, right? Now you got a crowd control problem at an OIS, and you got to make sure that the gun doesn't get taken, because that happens. You know, fortunately, these days we have a lot of video. So even if it does, it's not as critical as it may have been 20 years ago. But yeah, you get your hands full.
Thank you, Chuck. Guys, second commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, in today's world, protection goes beyond physical safety, and it's about safeguarding those on the front lines from what we call hidden threats. And that's where MyTech, a division of Compliant Technologies, comes in. Now, MyTech provides advanced protective solutions designed for law enforcement, corrections, and first responders. Their Eagle Protect nitrile gloves, they offer 4-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, giving you peace of mind in high-risk environments. Plus, their MyShield disinfectants and sanitizers, they actually eliminate 99.9% of germs, bacteria, and viruses on contact. But we're not done. Plus, they continue the kill for up to 28 days, helping you stay protected both on and off duty. So when safety is non-negotiable, you can trust MyTech to deliver the protection that you need, and learn more about how to equip your team today at ComplianTechnologies.com/MyTech. Again, ComplianTechnologies/MyTech, because the best defense starts with the right protection. All right, guys, now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up next week, July the 9th, Bulletproof DUI Report. Sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game, because, frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. Again, that is BlueTheGold.com. BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Chris Noller, former LAPD Commander Chuck Springer, and also Rich Steripoli from the Secret Service. So thanks, guys, for being on the show. We just talked about another officer-involved shooting involving a bad guy that was, he had a gun. He was running from the officer, you know, that was trying to grab onto him, and then he just turns around and shoots the officer in the foot, and he gets in a shootout with three other cops, and it didn't go well for him. Chief Noller.
Yeah, I just, you know, this whole thing, when I watched it, just infuriated me with what happened to those officers after that shooting, with the crowd basically trying to antagonize them, prevent them from doing their job, prevent them from rendering aid to the person that they just shot. Potentially, and you know, Chuck brought it up, putting themselves in a position where they could have taken that firearm, maybe used it against the officers, or secreted it away to try to make the argument that the man wasn't armed. Something has got to change. We have got to make an example of people that do that kind of thing, and they have to face serious consequences when they do that kind of behavior. It's unacceptable, and I think it's the politicians in a lot of places that are fomenting this activity towards the officers. You had the, not to change the subject, but you had a California, I think, vice mayor talking about encouraging the gangs to interfere with federal officers while they're trying to do their job. Whether you agree with the roundup of illegal immigrants or not, encouraging gang members to attack law enforcement officers is the most irresponsible thing I've ever heard of. And it encourages the exact kind of behavior that those Baltimore officers faced. And as a cop and as a leader of cops, it infuriates me when I see officers put in that position to defend themselves against a crowd that has no right to do what they're doing.
Good point. Rich, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, it used to be a cop could rely on, especially a uniform cop, could rely on the citizenry to provide some assistance if a cop was in trouble. But I don't think you can say that anymore. So, you know, as a police chief, I don't know what kind of edict you'd give to your troops before they turn out. But you got to remind them, hey, this is what happens, you know, and it's particularly given today's political climate. You've got the leadership, elected officials who are coming to the perp's defense much more quickly than they'll ever come to a cop's defense. And that deputy mayor in Los Angeles, I hope she goes to prison for the rest of her life, right? She's basically empowered street gangs to go and what, shoot federal agents? This is unacceptable, right? We've got to shut this down and restore some sanity to what's going on here.
Yeah, consequences. I love it. You know, Chief Noller, can you give us an update on your three officers that were involved in that shooting? And I know that you were all over the media calling it, well, there were no, well, talking about consequences. It was soft on crime legislation. How are they doing?
They're doing well. We actually had the three officers that were shot that night. And then 6 weeks later, we had another officer shot. So there's four of my officers that have been shot within like a 6 week period of time. Two of the officers are back to work. One of those is going to have to undergo another surgery probably in the coming weeks. He's on light duty, but working. Other two officers that haven't returned to work yet still have quite a ways to go before they're going to be able to, if they're able to. One of them, I'm pretty confident, will be able to return to work, but it's going to be months and months down the road. He got shot five times. He's a tough dude. The other officer is still trying to recover from his injuries as well. So thanks for asking.
Well, that's tough. That's tough. And just a little reminder to the people that watch the show, this is a dangerous job. And a lot of people want to tell us how they do our jobs, but they wouldn't want to switch places with us. And rightfully so. Well, gentlemen, if you're ready to move on, we've got another story with another video component. So, and this one is still, we're still at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter, but we have a sergeant shoots a robbery suspect when an officer was pinned inside the open door as the suspect took off.
Out! Out of the car! Out! 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 Hey! Hey! Out! Hold on. Shots fired. Stop! Stop! Hey, we need HFC out here at the 5,000 block of West Palm. Underground! Underground! Anybody else inside?
You're gonna fucking kill me!
We're at the 5,000 block of West Palm. We need HFC out here. We got one more shot. Conscious and breathing.
Please, sir.
Are you okay, Sarge?
Sarge, okay?
Hey, Sarge.
Hey, get him out of here. Hey, help me out. Get him out the road.
So, this is a sergeant. It looked like he was a bicycle. You know, they had the bicycle cops, or they have, what's the name that they use for these guys? Come on, Chuck, you're bicycle man. What do they call them? It's not like a motor man, but the bike squad or whatever.
Bike officer.
There's a little bike helmets and stuff. But he was a sergeant. There are some. Maybe some flags going on when I read the story. So we're in Texas, Houston, Texas. There's body-worn camera footage. This incident happened in May at the Houston Galleria. It shows the moment an officer shot and injured a suspect who failed to follow officer commands following a reported robbery. So robbery is that first flag word for me. So we're dealing with a robbery suspect. The video released by the Houston Police Department on Tuesday shows an officer approaching the driver's side of a blue sedan with a service weapon pointed at the window. Now, I'm just trying to visually create a verbal word picture, for lack of a better term, for our listeners and viewers so they can see what's going on, because I know I don't have the benefit of playing the video during the live show. But you've got lanes of traffic. This vehicle is in the middle of those, perpendicular, going, you know, just cutting through the lanes of traffic, and he can't go any further. There's traffic in front of him. He's trying to get all the way through traffic going in one direction to traffic going another direction, but he's like cutting through from a parking lot. And so he's a robbery suspect. They know that he's a robbery suspect. So he's kind of stuck in traffic. And so this, it looked like he was dressed in gear like a bike cop would be wearing. And he had the hard hat in, like the bike hat. He rolls up there. He has his gun out. But he's solo. Other officers are on the perimeter trying to get closer, but he is really by himself. And he opens up the driver's door and he steps into this door jam where the door is open, and he's up close and personal to the bad guy driver. And the video that we have of this, the gun disappears inside the car. So he actually puts the gun inside the vehicle right close to where the bad guy driver is, right? So the driver claims to not have done anything before driving forward across packed lanes of traffic, and he pins the officer inside this open doorway. This door is open. The officer's in the middle, and the guy, right when the officer sticks his gun in there, the guy starts to move forward. That door closes because there's another car up against the car's bumper, forces that open door to close on the sergeant who's got his gun in there, and he shoots several times, and he ends up hitting the suspect driver. When the car, the bad guy's car, makes it past this car that's scraping the driver's door and forcing it close and crushing the sergeant, when he gets past him, that car comes to a stop. The bad guy crawls out of the car. He needs help because he's been shot. And our sergeant jumps up and he runs over there, although he did have to go to the hospital afterwards as well. It said that the officers, they render aid to the bad guy, put a tourniquet on him, slow the building. The suspect, identified as Maxie Ray Whitaker, 42 years old, was charged with aggravated assault of a peace officer following the incident. And the type of robbery, did they call it jugging, which is where you follow the victim from a bank or an ATM and rob them at a secondary location. So that's kind of sets the stage for what happened. So I'm sure, you know, it's easy. I realize it's easy, the Monday morning quarterback. But if this went down the way that the article says it did, and we know that we're dealing with an armed robbery suspect, I would have liked to have seen it handled a different way. We see so many things involving vehicles, occupied vehicles, that, and just because a vehicle's in traffic doesn't mean that the guy just can't, you know, start ramming cars, as we've seen as well. So I hate to see people get injured, especially when maybe it was unnecessarily. There are a lot of things, valuable things that can be learned from this, and really a lot of things involved in training. And I know, Chuck, you're big on training. And what we train for today and how they do things, we didn't necessarily do 20 and 30 years ago. So training, there's a progression where we learn more and we can do the job better. But what do you think, Chuck?
Well, I definitely have some issues with what he did. You know, we've discussed this on the show in the past about how dangerous cars are. You know, once they start moving, just get away from them. And then, as you also mentioned, he opens the door and he almost climbs in the car with the guy, and he's got his pistol out. So now you're presenting a gun to a potential suspect. I think it could have been handled a lot differently. I think you go in the verbalization mode. And if the guy takes off, the guy takes off. You know, it is what it is. As you mentioned, he's a robbery suspect. You don't know what kind of weapons he has. And you don't have anybody. You have people on your team close by, but not immediately with you. You know, I don't know how this investigation will go down, but I can see a coin flip on whether it goes out of policy or not.
That's another good point. You know, was it? You know, good point. Rich, I don't know how much action this, you know, some people don't get a lot of action, especially when you're in unit, if you're on a bike squad or whatever, but there's a lot of unanswered questions. But Rich?
Well, you know, I think that's part of it, picking up on what Chuck said, right? I don't think tactically, it just didn't seem like they were prepared to really stop this car and pull this guy out of there. Particularly, you think you've got a robbery suspect in the vehicle. You know, where's the harm in waiting a couple of minutes for some backup, additional vehicles, because that bike isn't going to do you any good at this point. And then tactically move in on this vehicle. Otherwise, it plays out, well, just the way we saw it play out. It wasn't good for anyone.
Yeah, this could have ended so much worse than what it did. So I'm just glad that everybody survived, including the bad guy. But guys, coming up on our third commercial break, stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialists like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, forensic organizations, police departments, and federal agencies nationwide. And if you're watching the show and you have your own agency, you're a chief or a sheriff, they've got a great deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's a idea that founder Dan O'Kelly had that he put into action. So go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. And congratulations to Jerry Ramos for winning the free $50 Girls gift card giveaway. So congratulations there. We've been talking about a story, bad guy, armed robber. They stopped him in his car. We have a guy from the pedal squad. Get that, bike pedals, get it. I just kind of made that up. But anyhow, we learned something. Look, it's not really to throw anybody under the bus, but it is. It's kind of cool where we can watch things go down and then figure out maybe better ways to do them, right? Glad that the cop was not seriously injured. But I think in hindsight, you know, there are things that even off the information that we had at the time, ways we see these things every day, right? We see these things go down, and we've seen some really good, intelligent ways to do these, and then we've seen some things go down that were cops just lucky to be able to walk away. So there's definitely a training benefit to do things, to cover stories like this, and even to show them at police academies or even in service training for active officers, because it's all about learning. And nobody on the show is perfect. I have done some stupid things in my career, and I have gotten out on a traffic stop with an FTO when I first came on, and I forgot to put the car to take it out of gear. And I'm walking up on the car, and so is my FTO, and I'm looking at my car coming right at us, and I have to run, and I went in and I put the brake on and put it in gear, and she never was even the wiser. So you learn. There's a human component to what we do, which means we all make mistakes. If there's nothing else on this story, and you guys are ready to roll to the next one, because we got some good stuff. In fact, this is Butter's channel at Rumble. Man, there were some. I mean, when I went and grabbed the stories yesterday evening for today, it was all new stories. There was just a lot of stuff. So this next one here. At rumble.com. This is Butters the channel. Concord police officer shoots an armed bank robbery suspect with a drum on a handgun.
Where'd it go?
Where?
Hey, sorry, I'm trying to carjack someone.
Hey! Let me see your hands! Hey! Hey, come back! Let me see your hands! Stop! Fuck! Hey, are you okay?
And myself and a couple
of people. Yeah, we're in the freeway.
Wrong side of the road. Wrong side of the road. Okay, just TC'd with somebody right in front of 880.
They're on the road, okay.
Suspect is, two suspects running. Stand by. 999. Mulberry. Get on the ground! Get on the fucking ground! He's got a gun with a drum on it. One suspect being taken into custody. I'll give you an address in a little bit.
Give me your other arm!
So look, we have another armed robber, and let's look and see how differently this one is held. We still have vehicles involved. So Concord, California. So this is over in Chuck's old neck of the woods. Videos released by Concord Police. They appear clearly to show that this guy that they shot after a bank robbery on April the 21st, after a lengthy pursuit in San Jose and several carjacking attempts, that he actually was holding a gun. So the guy's name is Cruz Vargas. And, you know, it would be a bad guy that has a cool name like that, huh? Cruz Vargas. Why can't we have cool names like that? But 29 years old of San Jose, he recovered from a gunshot wound after the incident. How this guy survived, I don't know. But Contra Costa County prosecutors have charged him with multiple counts of armed robbery and carjacking, plural. I mean, he's a bad dude, along with multiple weapons violations, according to the court record. So police identify the officer who shot him as Sergeant Francisco Ramirez, and they identified one of the other Concord police officers involved in the pursuit as Corporal Sean Parsley. Now, authorities identified Vargas, our bad guy's cohort, in the car during the pursuit, and he was a 21-year-old named Elijah Phillips of San Jose. And according to the court records, prosecutors also charged Phillips, the cohort, with multiple counts of armed robbery and carjacking and one count of being in possession of a machine gun. Now, this handgun had been converted to fully automatic, and it had a drum magazine on it, if you can imagine that. So not something easy to conceal, but boy, could you do some damage with that. Now, the video shows the vehicle allegedly driven by Vargas, bad guy number one. It crosses over the double yellow lines, crashes into another car in San Jose. Video shows the suspects, they run from the car in different directions after the crash. Now, all the drama started from a robbery at the Diablo Valley Federal Credit Union in Concord. So they robbed the credit union. They got a video of that. And it shows two guys that are wearing gray hoodies. They're fully masked up. They enter the credit union. It's 9:42 in the morning. They have guns. And the tellers quickly gather handfuls of cash, and they hand it over to these two guys. So Vargas and Phillips are two bad guys. They drive off after the robbery. And police officers spot them, and they start a pursuit. The pursuit enters the southbound Interstate 680, and it went uninterrupted until they have heavy traffic, just kind of like this last robbery thing where the guy got bogged down in traffic. Now, here's where the stories get different. The suspect's vehicle, it becomes disabled. They get out, and they carjack a car, but it's a Tesla. And they got the people behind the Tesla, they got their cell phone cams, and they're thinking, it's like, oh, wow, look what's going on. Never knowing that they're about to become the victims, right? So the dude in the Tesla, they force him out of the Tesla. He's got a cell phone. He disables the freaking Tesla. They can't do anything. They can't go anywhere in the Tesla, which means I believe it was a male and female in the car behind the Tesla. Now these guys turn their attention on these people, and they start freaking out. So they get into their car, and they successfully, you know, carjack them. While this is going on, we got a motor unit. Now, this is a real motor dude. He's not a guy that rides pedals around on bicycles, right? This is a real motor cop, Chuck, right? There is a difference, right? I mean, you know, LAPD, you know, you guys are all over that motor cop thing. So this guy lays the bike down, runs up there, and he has his gun out. When he's rolling up in the car, you got the two civilians, you know, getting out of the back seat. And the bad guys are already in the driver's and passenger seat of this car. And the windows are tinted, but he points his gun, tells them to stop. They drive away. He checks on the two civilians that just got carjacked, and now the chase is on again. So the guys have they disabled the original car. The Tesla that was carjacked couldn't go anywhere. So this is their third vehicle that they're in. So our motor guy was Corporal Parsley, and so they're in the third vehicle now. There's chases reaching speeds of 70 miles an hour. And shortly after that, the chase ends in a crash. And as the suspects are driving on the wrong side of a two-lane road. So Vargas, he runs away. And Sergeant Ramirez, an unidentified Concord police officer, are pursuing him. Phillips, the other bad guy, you can see him running on foot in a different direction after the crash. Of course, they get both of them. But the video shows the suspect, Vargas, he's running down the street. And he's got this huge pistol with the drum magazine on it that's been converted to fully auto, by the way. And he's ignoring commands by Sergeant Ramirez to get on the ground. Now, you see in the video, and I know we've only got around 3 minutes left, so I'm going to try to pick this up. The original car, you know, on the dash cam following the bad guy, he stops and backs away. But then you've got another cop that's a little bit more maybe confident, or you could argue stupid, but he starts pursuing. He gets a lot closer to the bad guy. And now the original lead car is no longer the lead car, and he wants to become the lead car again. So he joggles back into position. Now he's the lead guy. But you know, that can happen. You got a guy with a gun. So, you know, you're in a car, but it's only going to provide you so much, you know, cover. So The suspect, he goes by three cars. He dumps the gun on the ground, thinking he's going to carjack another car, puts the gun down, but the car is locked, picks the gun back up, starts to run away. And our cop, I think, takes one shot, hits him. He goes down, he gets back up, he runs away, and then they tackle him. So they end up getting him, and they arrest the other guy later. And so we've already talked about the charges for the bad guy. This is the way this thing goes down. We got a little over 2 minutes. Chief Chris Noller.
I'll just make it quick. My wife was came downstairs while I was watching this video because I was yelling at the car, at the guy in the car to run the guy over. That, you know, hit him with the car, hit him with the car. I kept saying,
yes.
She was like, what are you yelling about? So, I mean, I thank God the other guy kept going, because at some point it's not going to just be a carjacking where people are yanked out of a car. He's going to end up shooting somebody or something, and you got to take action and get those guys into custody. The cops did a great job. If it was me, I think I would have hit him with my car.
Yeah. Well, Rich is from New York. We all know what he would have done.
Hey, I got to agree with you. And Chip and I have had this discussion, right? There's no department or agency that teaches or advocates their guys running somebody over. But if there is ever a situation where I think you'd be perfectly legitimate to do that, it's this one. So I'm with you on that, Chief.
Yeah. And Chuck, how would LAPD roll on this one?
I think we would run them over. Absolutely. I think there's a strong argument for the fleeing felon conditions here. He's made it clearly that he intends to use that handgun at some point, because he's maintained possession of it. And when he's dumped it, he's retrieved it again. So, yeah, I think, I'm not going to criticize him for not doing that, but I think you're good to go on running him over long before he ever gets to this last car, actually.
Yeah. I got to admit, the same thought ran into my mind as well. We are seeing more cops use their cars as a deadly weapon. But, you know, with an agency, you simply can't outlaw everything, even the carotid restraint. You can try outlawing it, but there are points in time where you're fighting a bad guy and everything goes. I mean, ink pen through the temple. I mean, there's a certain point in time where everything goes. You say you really can't prohibit, in my opinion, legally, everything. There's always a component where that vehicle could be used, and it's more safe than doing it the other way. Guys, we're rolling up on the end of the show. Been another fantastic show. Thank you so much to Chief Chris Noller from Pueblo Police Department of Colorado, and of course Agent Rich Steripoli from Secret Service, and Chuck Springer, former LAPD commander. Another great show. I usually take this opportunity to talk about the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. If you guys aren't familiar with the Wounded Blue, please go there. They've got a summit coming up as well. So it's really a great organization to be associated with. And, I also want to mention our sponsors as well. Guys, please support our sponsors. They go to great lengths to support this radio show. And being on satellite radio is not cheap. That's why a lot of shows are podcast and they're not on radio or on satellite radio or nationally syndicated like we are. A shout out to goals.com, our title sponsor, Complex Technologies, our satellite sponsor, Gunlearn, Blue the Gold, MyMedicare.life, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor, Two Bells. Thanks for the support. We'll look for you guys back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern. Thanks again.